with the first pick in the draft, second pick, the third pick, with the fourth pick, the fifth pick.
Here's the pitch. He swings as a long drive to right, and it is a home run for Gibson.
He's got something. 30, he's 40, got something.
50,
he's got it.
40,
he's got it.
20, 10,
he's got it.
End zone.
You're listening to Fantasy Advice Bros. Here's your host, Ali.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ali, and I am joined by my brother Rams, and we are the Fantasy Advice Bros. We are trying to be the worst fantasy podcast in the history of the pot store. Rams, how you doing? How do you like what you're smoking?
Doing very well. I'm liking it a lot. I'm also loving the high standards that you're setting for us. This is good. I like goals that are attainable, so you're doing well.
As usual, consistency is key, and a minute ago, you had asked me, where is Walter White? Why is she not in the garage with us?
Yes, because 99.99999% of the time, she is in the garage, also smoking and enjoying a hookah.
She's not here because a few days ago, she told me she was going to do a simple procedure at the dentist's office. And then I get a flood of text messages cussing out the dentist office.
Oh,
and
fuck.
The end result is her procedure, not so simple. Apparently, she can't smoke for 6 weeks. And Walter White smokes 8 days a week.
Is she okay? Have you checked her pulse? Is she all right? She's sleeping? Is she having withdrawals and shit?
No, I think she's ready to burn down the house and burn me with it.
I believe that.
Not a happy camper. Tread lightly when you see Walter White. Caution, caution, tread lightly around Walter White.
You got it. That's catty advice.
All right. Last week, we concluded with you and I were playing each other head-to-head in the first ever Brothers Fantasy Week. And congratulations, you won. You didn't just win, you dominated.
Yeah, I had a wonderful last day of the week. My pitching finally fucking came through and it feels nice. But before we deep dive into that, can I just tell you that I'm very, very proud of you?
Oh, yeah? That sounds sexy. Keep talking.
So every Monday, our lineups lock on Mondays, right? So
yeah.
every Monday.
Before the first game, because we set them for the week.
Look at you.
Yeah.
So every Monday after the lineups lock, I'll go in and I'll look at your lineup. And we're on week 8 now, and this is the first time that you've actually bench somebody due to performance, because before it was just field a full lineup. If a guy's injured, DL, see you later on the bench. But you actually benched a couple players due to performance and matchups. I'm so proud. Like, you benched Tanaka because he's been pitching like shit.
True.
And you benched Matt Moore, who's coming off of a good start, but he pitched in Chicago last night. So absolutely the right thing to do. That's a tough, miserable matchup. Very, very proud. We're making strides here.
Thank you. Matt Moore, who I consistently call Mr. Aggregate Zero, because after a 15-point performance in the positive column, he tends to bounce back with a minus 10 or a minus 8. This week, I benched him against the Cubs, and lo and behold, he was still worth a positive 2 or 3.
He actually pitched well last night, yeah.
Yeah, so let's get into that. And the text message you had sent me earlier this week, you said, you're the only guy in the country who started Scott Feldman for Cincinnati, and he got me 26 points on Monday. And I did a backflip, but I picked him up weeks ago, and we had talked about pitchers who are listed as starting pitchers and relief pitchers, and he was doing pretty good. And I said to you, why not? And I think you said there's some flightiness in there, but why not?
Yeah, more or less the flightiness is that he's generally not a very good starting pitcher. He's been around for a little while. He's a veteran at this point. He's well into his 30s. He's pitched on numerous teams. But you picked him up after he threw like a complete game shutout, which was fucking the best start of his career. So I was like, okay, yeah, I get it. And then after that, I'm like, he's going to shit the bed a couple times and you're just going to cut him. But I look up Monday night, right? They're taking on Cleveland.
Yeah, he's my guy.
Yeah. Shit, he should be now. I wish I would have picked him up at this point. So I'm playing Cleveland, and I'm like, oh, fuck, that's a tough matchup. He's going to get shelled. And he goes 8 strong, and he pitches great, and he gets the win. And I look at your score, you know, Monday night, and I'm like, holy shit. Nobody else outside of his mom started him Monday night. Not in season long, unless you're in like a fucking 16-team league. Maybe in daily fantasy because it was so cheap and you're taking up a prayer, but I mean, that paid off, and it shouldn't have.
Well, it paid off in dividends, and you know, we're talking about this stuff weekly on this podcast, and I figured, you know, when I'm setting my lineup, I should put in a little bit more rigor, hence the benching of Tanaka and Matt Moore. I'm looking at matchups, and I'm not just looking at ERA anymore like I once did.
I love it.
And I'm looking at the run support these pitchers are getting, and I'm looking at the matchups. So I'm taking a few things into account now, as we've talked about, because these are things when I was asking you weeks ago, I really didn't know, because I'm the baseball virgin and you're the veteran, so I need the help myself.
Dude, like the biggest best example was this week, and I wrestled with it so hard. Matt Harvey, you know, you remember a couple of years ago, was a Cy Young contender, right? Throwing 98, locating great. He was a top 10 pitcher in baseball. He hasn't been good in 2 years, and this year, statistically, he's the worst starting pitcher in baseball. Statistically, right? But this week, it just so happened, he got cut in our league last week, so he was on waivers.
Oh, wow.
Right. So this week, playing against Pittsburgh and against San Diego, bottom five offenses. You can't draw better matchups for your starting pitcher, period, right? So I looked at him, and it's, you know, more than anything, you want your pitcher to win. Because like we talked about before, you get 12 points for that.
Yep, and, so, the QS and the Ks are quality start, and the strikeouts are also worth a lot of points.
Yeah, absolutely. But still, the win is king.
Yep.
If you can get it. So you look at those matchups, and you're like, God, he should win. He should win at least one of those two matchups. And if you're going to get one win out of two starts, you're going to take it every week, right? But then I looked at him, and I'm like, he's just pitching so fucking poorly. And I was like, you know what? I can't do it. I can't go for that ride. I left him on waivers. Somebody picks him up, right? Started him, to their credit. He won Monday night.
Nice.
But he still pitched like shit. Five innings, four walks, two earned against the Padres. Again, a bottom five offense. So that kind of a start against anybody else, he would have gotten lit up. So it's the risk-reward thing. It's, if you're going to do something like that, you better be damn sure he's going to get the win.
Yeah, and that's what I'm noticing, and that's kind of why I kept Feldman in. And there's another pitcher that I picked up and started today, and he's owned in less than 20%, and I got a win out of him, and I'll get to that. But here's where I want to go in today's podcast. I want to do something a little different. For weeks now, I've been saying how in football, trade offers start happening after the second or third week of the season. And in baseball, I was like, well, nothing's happening. And I know it's a marathon because baseball takes, the season is so damn long. But this week in our league, we had two trades approved. And today, I got a trade offer.
Ooh, and that's exciting.
I haven't accepted or rejected because I want to pitch it past you on this podcast and see what you think.
This is very, very exciting.
But first, let's talk about the first trade that went through, because I didn't understand it.
Okay. And
what didn't I understand? A team manager offered up Chris Archer, starting pitcher of the Tampa Bay, and in return, he traded Nelson Cruz of Seattle, Joey Gallo of Texas, and Antonio Senzatella,
yeah, for Colorado. He's a rookie for the Rockies.
So I know Chris Archer is great, right, which is why he gave up a King's Ransom, three players for him. Was that a fair trade?
It was definitely a fair trade. And I guess to simplify it, you can boil it down to more or less Nelson Cruz for Archer. So the owner that pursued Archer, for sure, just has a need for starting pitching. Pretty much everybody, it's a 12-guy league at this point with the injuries and ineffectiveness of starters across the league, needs starting pitching. So you're going to pay a pretty hefty price if you're going to get it. Archer's still considered a top 10, top 15 pitcher.
Right, which is why I'm surprised he got traded, but he got a King's Ransom for him, right?
He did. No, he did well for himself. Nelson Cruz is well on his way to another 35-40 home run season, and that's really, really nice. He's not slowing down, and he's 36, 37 years old, something like that. But that's why if you're going to go out now, everybody needs pitching. Everybody needs pitching, supply and demand, right? If you're going to go after a top starting pitcher, you're going to be ready to part ways with some good shit. That's the only way it's going to get done.
Okay. And then the very next day, another trade went through, and it was three players for three. And I'm going to use my, again, I didn't understand, but One team owner got Jonathan LaCroix of Texas, Jose Bautista, your old boyfriend Jake Arrieta.
Yeah. I rode him to a championship.
Those three guys went for Will Myers of San Diego, Eddie Rosario of Minnesota, and Michael Fulmer, who was Rookie of the Year in Detroit as a starting pitcher last year. Was that a fair trade? There's two starting pitchers in there.
It's a fair trade. Admittedly, it's a trade that I don't too much understand from the standpoint of I don't feel like anybody's really, really coming out ahead. It's a matter of you think Arrieta is going to pitch better than he's pitched because he's pitching to a sub-5 ERA at this point. His ERA is like 4.48 or something like that, which is pretty shitty. And he's been declining the last couple of years. And Michael Fulmer has been killing it. He's pitching great, but then it's a matter of, okay, do you think Fulmer is going to sustain, or do you think Arrieta is just going to get back to his Cy Young form from a couple of years ago, basically?
You're asking the same questions I was thinking, and anybody who's doing baseball probably has those questions. And as the baseball virgin, and I don't watch a lot of baseball, I'm going to ask the same question. Do you think Fulmer can sustain? In my opinion, from what he did last year, he was great, and so far this year he is. My answer for Fulmer is yes. And do you think your old boyfriend Jake is going to get back up to par, I guess?
So two parts. We'll start with Fulmer. I absolutely think he can sustain because when you look at his underlying numbers, nothing is fluky. His velocity is still really good. He's throwing hard. He's still striking out guys at a good clip. He's not walking a ton. There's nothing there to suggest that he's been like super lucky and eventually, you know, it's going to come back to him. Whereas with Arrieta, it's kind of the different story. His velocity has been steadily declining the last couple of years. He's been walking a lot more guys than he has previously. And he's just been generally hittable, which explains the ERA. He's not getting unlucky. He's got a phenomenal defense behind him. The Cubs defense is a top defense in all of baseball. So if somebody's putting a ball in play, more than likely it's either being caught or fielded appropriately. So with Arrieta, I wouldn't get back on that train.
Really?
I would have sold him. I mean, in reality, I didn't target him in any drafts anyway because he's been steadily declining. I like the Fulmer side of that deal.
Really? So you think Jake is on a decline? You don't think it's an injury thing? You think his performance is just like not going to get back up to what it once was?
Correct. I think he peaked a couple of years ago, and I think he's had an extremely heavy workload the last couple of years. I think it's catching up, and you can just see it. He's not throwing as hard as he used to, and his control is not what it once was. He's just a lot more hittable than he used to be.
Okay. That's fair. And then today, it just happened a few hours ago. And what I noticed in our league is I have 24 hours to accept or reject this trade. And I'm going to tell you what it is.
Awesome.
My starting pitcher, Marcus Stroman of Toronto, who's been pretty decent for me because I took him in a late enough round. I think it was probably round 12 or something.
He's been good. Yeah, he's been very good.
The guy is offering me, and I don't know either of these players, Kendrys Morales of Toronto and Jeremy Hellickson of Philadelphia.
Oh, this is a terrible fucking offer.
Oh, is it? Why?
He's offered you nothing. Morales is somebody who kind of hamstrings you from the beginning because he's only eligible at your utility spot. He's only eligible as a designated hitter. You know what I mean? So he has to occupy your utility spot, whereas you would like to keep that open if you have, let's say, two second basemen that are killing it. You want to keep them both on the lineup, then you just, you know, one at second base, one at utility. And besides, he hasn't exactly been letting the world on fire. And Hellickson is fresh off of getting his ass handed to him, I think last night or two nights ago, by the Colorado Rockies. Hellickson hasn't pitched particularly well at all this year. Like, in some leagues, he's sitting on waivers. This is a very, very, very poor offer. There's really nothing to consider here, actually. That's
okay.
Shit.
So for you, it's the instant reject button. But talk to me. Let's talk in terms of rounds, right? I just told you I took Stroman around the 10th, 12th round, whatever it was at the time.
I remember, yeah.
Those two players that he's offering me, are you saying they went, like, after round 20 or something?
Hellickson was somebody that could have been had in the bottom three or four rounds. I think our draft was 24 rounds. Hellickson, you could have grabbed in about the 20 or the 21st round. Hellickson was, Like, he pitched well last year. He didn't pitch great. He pitched well. He's more or less an average starting pitcher on a team that doesn't score a lot of runs, so he's not going to get you any wins. Anyway, the Phillies' offense is a fucking train wreck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Morales is injury prone, and like I said, he's only eligible at the utility spot. Now, like, David Ortiz, for example, was only eligible at utility.
But he's a Hall of Famer.
But, okay, yeah, exactly. So, last year, you're happy to plug that guy into the utility spot and let him occupy it the entire year. But Morales isn't exactly lighting the world on fire, especially with the premium that pitching is at now. That's nothing.
So you think this guy was doing it, hoping that I'm either...
He really, truly was trying to take advantage of the virgin that you are.
Okay, so I was about to get lynched, folks, and my brother just spared me from getting lynched.
Yeah, we would have had problems if you would have accepted this trade.
Okay. And my guess is I got the trade offer because I saw all these articles pop up in the last 3 days. What should Freddie Freeman owners do? And I shed my tears for him last week because yeah. He's out, and I moved him to my DL, and I'm not going to cut him. My best guess is, based off what you said, that's probably why I got a crappy trade offer.
That's fine, but I mean, still, I get wanting to supplement the owner that just lost somebody, but there's a difference between, you know, making a reasonable offer and just kind of hoping to fleece somebody, and he was just hoping to fleece you.
So don't even counter him, because he was like fleecing / lynching me. So I'm basically just hitting the reject button then. Right?
If you want to look at the roster and you see something that sticks out, and maybe you want to counter for Stroman, with the way starting pitching is. And it's funny, Stroman as a pitcher, I like him a lot. The reason why I avoided him for myself in the preseason was because I just don't like that division. You're going to face the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Orioles.
Good hitting teams.
Yeah, and you know, you're going to see them 50 total times. Granted, he pitches every fifth day. He's not going to get them every time, but I don't like that. I would tend to avoid it unless it's somebody that's like, holy shit, amazing. But still, with that said, Stroman's pitched very, very well this year.
Yeah, he's done pretty good for me. He's typically in my rotation. I had him as a non-rotational guy. James Paxton, who's been on the 10-day DL for the last 30-plus days. Fucker. Might as well have been on the, you know.
I think he'll be back next year. Or next week, excuse me.
Yeah, I read that report 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, and a yeah. week ago. So I'm just crossing my fingers.
Teams are really shitty with starting pitching injuries. The information that they give usually tends to not be accurate.
Okay, and then because it's a marathon, not a sprint. Last week, we talked about my Seattle reliever, Edwin Diaz, who started the year pretty hot. He cooled down. He got benched. I actually kept him in my lineup this week because what I was reading, and when you watch him, his mechanics still look pretty good, was he might still be like the, what did they call the guy before? The setup guy.
Setup man, yep.
And a couple of games, he was a setup guy. He got me a point or two, but last night, tonight, actually, against Washington, he got me 8.7 because he got the save.
He got the save. So, you know, I've been tracking it hard because, you know, when we talked about it last week, I said I actually felt shitty about it because that's somebody I had, like, a crush on. I really wanted, and I was thrilled that he ended up...
Because you had him last year.
Yeah, I grabbed him. And I loved watching him, and I felt like he was just going to continue to progress. So what worked in your favor is a couple of things. And one of them is what we talked about last week, where we said they want him to succeed. They want him to be the guy in the ninth inning. And that's a huge, huge part of it, because so many managers are fickle. And a lot of managers don't give a shit. You know, if somebody's going to be able to hold down the ninth, they don't care who it is. They'll rock it out. But Scott Servais is Seattle's manager. He came out and he said, I want Diaz to be the guy. I want him to get his shit together. And then, you know, when he's ready, we'll put him back into that role. He pitched effectively over the weekend, and they asked him, they said, you know, are you going to plug him back in that role? And he said he pitched really well tonight. If he pitches well one more time or so, I'll consider it. He pitched very well a couple days ago, and then today, true to his words, Servais put him back in, and he got the save. At this point, if he gives you a couple of weeks of, you know, not blowing up, you should hopefully be able to ride him the rest of the year, because the talent is there and they want him. And the great thing is, over those 5, 6, 7 days, whatever it was, when they were evaluating everything, nobody really stepped up and took the job Like, none of the other relievers ultra impressed. So it was, let's get Diaz back in here. So that worked out perfectly.
So there's a couple more guys I want to talk about on my roster for a moment. I had picked up Fernando Rodney almost a month ago. You weren't an advocate of it. And I picked him up after he was red hot. He led the majors in saves, and then he blew a couple and he gave up a couple of runs. But he saved two of the last three nights. He hasn't given up a run in the last six outings he had or whatnot. He's top three in the majors in saves right now, and he's only like 35% owned when I checked on him earlier today. But I know he's a little flighty, but he's great if you plug him in. I don't understand why he's so low owned. I love Fernando Rodney right now, and he's 40 years old.
Well, I don't blame you at the moment. And to your credit, you held on strong when a lot of people wouldn't have. I can tell you, I would have discarded him. He's been a tale of 2 months. His April was really, really poor. He was constantly putting runners on base, and he's always walked, you know, a proverbial tightrope. But really, in April, he was a walking heart attack, essentially. He settled down considerably in May, and now it's a really, really favorable situation because the Diamondbacks are a surprise team. They're winning a lot of games. He's getting a chance to close more than, you know, most analysts had anticipated at the beginning of the season. So now it's looking really good. Hopefully he can keep it up. Truly, I think at some point he's just going to explode because I think he's a fucking gas can. But ride him while you can, because now it's paying off.
Yeah, and I remember him back in his Detroit days a few years ago. He used to make the fans sweat and the fans would get pissed, but he'd get saves. And I'm to the point where I don't give a shit if he's going to make me sweat for a minute and he's going to get me 8, 9, 10 points. I'll take it. Why not?
No, you're absolutely right. Look, if he's going to get the save and a manager is comfortably going to keep trotting him out there in the ninth inning, then you ride him until it looks like, you know, it's done.
Okay. And then a guy I picked up this week that I started, and he actually started tonight, was Mark Andreas of Tampa Bay. He got me 24 points. He pitched a shutout. And the funny thing about him is he's still only owned in like 25% of leagues. And I don't understand, because when I go through his stats and his points, he got shelled by the Yankees last week. But outside of getting shelled by the Yankees, his points have been there. What is it about Mark Andreas that people are afraid of or don't like? And even when I read his report, it's not all that up on him. But I'm like, fuck you. He's doing good. I mean, he had 5 Ks, 6 hits, 2 base on balls. He threw 112 pitches in 8 innings.
So, yeah, he pitched great today. So the thing with Matt Andreas is it's the shallow versus the depth, right? So in April, he's pitched pretty decently, like on the surface all year. But in April, the reason why he never really caught on was because he was getting lucky. He wasn't striking out a lot of guys, and he was putting a lot on base. And, you know, like we continue to talk about, at some point that shit is going to catch up.
Yeah, but let me just counter you with one thing. Right now in the season, he's 4-1, which I know, good hitting. But I'm going to read this to you backwards in the points. Against the Dodgers, he was 24 points last week. Against the Yankees, 14. And then before that, 17, 7, and 26. And he started the season with a 3 against Toronto. That's pretty damn solid to me. And
so, no, yeah, it is, especially this
he
year.
Should be owned, in my opinion, by everybody, and he's worth starting. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy. I'm just telling you, that's why he doesn't have a huge ownership tag, is because, one, basically he's not sexy. When you watch him, he doesn't throw super hard. He doesn't strike out a ton of guys. But who gives a shit, right? If he's going to pitch into games and he's going to win, then that's all that really matters. You'll take that, especially from somebody that, you know, you grabbed off of waivers.
And like you said, he's getting the win. He's 5-1, actually, after today.
Yep. It's funny, too, because Tampa's offense is kind of flighty as well. But, hey, you'll take it. So that worked out well. But the reason why he hangs out is because his peripherals aren't great. Now, what I will say is, and this is something that bodes well, very well for you, his peripherals have improved. So his strikeout-to-walk ratio in May is significantly better than it was in April. He's finally striking some guys out. So that points to he's improving and he's not getting so lucky anymore. So maybe you look at it and you can sustain it. But still, he's the kind of pitcher where you got to watch. If he's got one start that week and he's pitching in New York against the Yankees, I don't have the balls to start him. You do, kudos to you, but like that's something that I would ride. He's still somebody that I would play based only on matchup.
He's 5-1, and even against the Yankees, he got he didn't get shelled. They scored against him, but he was still double digit fantasy points.
Okay, yeah, but the reason why he had those 14 points is because he got the win. He got a shit ton of run support.
Great.
But I think, yeah, and that's awesome, but that's also unpredictable. But when you look at his line, I think he pitched 5 innings and gave up 6 earned. Like, he got his ass handed to him. You know what I mean? And the run support is so volatile that you can't really depend on that. That's why, you know, you want to throw out somebody that you're confident as best as you can be that they're going to pitch effectively.
Okay. And last week I was crying / happy. I was in first place. I lost my head-to-head against you. I dropped from first to third, which is survivable. We're in the middle of week 8, and the reason why I'm very eccentric is I'm the week high, and we're almost done with the week. We're just past the halfway point, and my moves and my pickups have worked, and I know that it's the marathon, and I'm getting that, right? It's nothing like football in that sense. I feel pretty good about my team, even without Freddie Freeman, and I just really got to sustain these next few weeks in the positive column, and then hopefully one day I can plug in Freddie Freeman for a playoff run.
Fucking Scott Feldman. But I'll tell you, no, you're exactly right, and that's why when we talked last week and, you know, you were suicidal about Freeman, I told you under no circumstance are you going to cut him. You hold, and, you know, you hope to ride it out. And, yeah, to your credit, you're having a wonderful week, and things are all trending in the right direction for you, which is kick-ass. At this point, first, third, sixth, it doesn't matter. If you can get into the playoffs and you can get Freeman back around that time, I'm telling you, that's like having a first-rounder airdrop to you in August. So there's nothing more that you can ask for. So, yeah, most definitely, just sit tight and hope that you can continue this trend.
Yeah, okay, and then as soon as you came over, your first words to me outside of hello were, I need you to make some free agent transactions. And I typically don't make too many during the week because, as we've stated a bunch, it's a marathon. And I like my general roster. I got done explaining some of the moves I made with Feldman and whatnot. What are you thinking? What do you mean by that? What are you expecting?
So it's a couple things. The first thing, and this is kind of like a universal thing, especially in fantasy baseball, is you always want to be churning the bottom of your roster. I know this is something that, you know, we'll get into heavy when we start doing college fantasy football.
Right.
Because that's something that you preach to me. Every week you make transactions, you cut guys, you pick guys up, and it's just churning the bottom of the roster. You hope you find that job.
Because there's 1,000 guys in college football, but there also is 1,000 guys in baseball.
So, right, exactly. And guys go on hot streaks, guys get into slumps. Of course, you're not going to cut your stud for somebody who's streaking, right, obviously. But it's nice to churn the bottom of your roster because you'll never know, man. Sometimes you'll pick up somebody who's streaking, and they'll win that week for you just because they go fucking bananas. They hit 4 home runs in 6 games. And that's the difference in your matchup for the week. That's kind of a universal thing. The other thing for you is, you know, I want you to be making transactions because there's guys that I want to be picking up that I just can't because I'm to a point where I watch so much and there's just not enough roster spots for me.
Ooh, this sounds like brother love here.
Well, it is. It is. I mean, I wouldn't go tell anybody else in the league, hey, go grab this guy. But like, there's a couple players that are streaking where, like, okay, for example, your utility spot has Dustin Pedroia in it.
Who's been red hot lately.
He's mostly a steady player. He's okay. He's going to help you in some categories.
He's not stealing bases the way he did. He lost power, but he's got contact.
Exactly.
I didn't know until the other day. He's coming. He's got a 6-game hit streak going right now.
Which is cool, but when they're all singles, it's kind of sort of meh. But like you said, there's no speed there anymore. He's older, and he's been through injury after injury.
Right.
And he's not really hitting for power anymore. So, like, Pedroia is not somebody that, you know, you want to cut, but you can churn a little bit, pick somebody up, and ride a streak in your utility spot for a week or two. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so then talk to me about who are you thinking, who are you seeing right now, free agents? Because this is good, because our listeners might be wondering, okay, I've got to make free agent transactions. Who are you thinking that you want me to pick up that you're eyeing that you're not sure that you're ready to churn the bottom of your roster with?
So I'm pretty set on my outfield, right? So there will be no outfield acquisitions for me. But for you, like, I like somebody like Adam Frazier. So he's batting leadoff for the Pirates.
A crappy Pirates team.
A super shitty Pirates team, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, but I have their reliever, Watson, and I'm all but ready to cut his fat ass.
I like Tony Watson, yeah. But I agree. He got shelled the other night. He gave up a walk-off home run. I think it was to the Mets, and he was like minus 11. I looked, and I'm like, fuck, I hope he didn't start him. And I looked, and he didn't. I was thrilled he still had Diaz in. So whether by luck or whatever else, you're pushing all the right buttons right now, so hopefully that sustains. But Frazier's somebody that stepped in because, if you remember, Starling Marte was the starting center fielder for the Pirates.
And no, I don't remember.
Yeah, so he might be their best position player. And he got popped for PEDs, 80 games, see you later.
Damn.
Yeah. He crushed a lot of people. Dude, he got drafted in like the third round in a lot of drafts.
Damn.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that owner is hurting big time.
Yeah, no shit. I actually looked the other day. The owner that drafted him is still holding him.
Wow. 80 games. That's almost going to be the season.
You got to understand, too, 80 games, and it's not disabled list. It's suspended.
Oh,
so
shit.
So he's taking up a roster spot.
Oh.
Like, if you drafted Marte, you want to fucking stab him right now. But that's besides the point. So Frazier's been the biggest beneficiary of that because he's the one that's gotten regular playing time. He stepped in at the beginning of the season, and he was kind of sort of meh. He ended up going on the DL, and since he came back from the DL, he's batting like 400.
Wow.
And it's a little bit. It's like 40 at-bats or so. So he's fucking hot. There's no telling if he's going to keep it up because he's a young player. There's no track record, so you know you just wait it out and you see. But he's been super effective, and he's batting leadoff. And any leadoff hitter in the bigs that's productive should be owned.
Sure, because at the top of the roster, because batters 3 and 4 are typically the top guys and whatnot. Exactly. And
even in a shitty offense, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So then I'm gonna ask you the dumb question. Why hasn't anybody else picked him up if he's this hot so far?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know if it's just a function of they don't believe in it because, again, there is no track record. I don't know if it's a function of he's on a super shitty team, like you said, or I don't know if, and I highly doubt this part, if everybody looks at their team and they say, okay, we're comfortable in the outfield. Now, I will say outfield is a lot deeper this year than it has been. It's very, very deep. You can go on the wire right now and pick up a productive outfielder. But
okay.
I think more than anything, it's the lack of a track record and the fact that he's on a super shitty team.
So outfield is deep, kind of like in the NFL, how wide receivers and a PPR have become deep. Is that what you...
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it, where if you've got injuries or bye weeks, you can go grab somebody that's going to catch 4 or 5 balls. I mean, you know, like my friend Dontrell Inman, who you don't too much care for, but I loved last year. 5 catches, 60 yards in a bye week. Or if you have an injury, that's, you know, that's 11 points and you'll take it. Kind of like that.
That's pretty solid. Okay, you said you thought I should make a couple of transactions. So that would be transaction one, which we can do after this podcast, because you actually made me feel warm and fuzzy on the inside, because as soon as you said it, I kind of rolled my eyes and I was like, yeah, I don't think so. But you know what? Your argument is fairly compelling. It's kind of hard to turn you away on it. And before the world figures this out in our league, I'll pick them up after this podcast. Who else did you have in mind?
So another one, and I don't know if you can do it because, you know, your closes are really good with Rodney and Edwin Diaz, but like the Washington Nationals just came out.
Oh, I can cut Watson. Don't worry. Watson is, he's ready to go for me.
I'll tell you what, then good. Then you'll do this. So the Washington Nationals, best team in the National League, right? They won a shitload of games.
Yep.
They've had bullpen troubles all year.
That's right. But I thought they, so I know this. They have great hitting, great starting pitchers, but a bad bullpen. But I thought they've been the football term is running back by committee in the bullpen, where they're using multiple guys.
Yes. That's exactly what's been happening. So you weren't able to own one guy for saves because Dusty Baker was just trying to find somebody that would work in that role. And it looks as though he has. He settled on somebody. His name's Kota Glover. And just last night, Dusty Baker came out and said, okay, this is my guy. He's my ninth inning guy. And everything there is nice. He has the prototypical closer makeup. Like, he throws really hard. He strikes guys out. He doesn't walk too many. He's a flamethrower. And he's somebody that, if he can continue to pitch as effectively as he's been, can rack up the saves on that team because they win so many games. I mean, there's going to be times when they win 8-2. It's going to be a non-save situation. But any kind of close game, if he gets a shot, because they win so much, he can pay off dramatically.
So you think he won the job then?
He definitely won the job. The reason why I haven't moved to do it is because I have a couple closers that I'm good with. Like, I just grabbed Addison Reed. Jerry's Familia of the Mets is pretty much going to be done for the year with a shoulder. And I feel pretty good with Addison Reed and Alex Colome, who I drafted for the Rays, and I love him. He's very, very consistent. He's drama-free. You'd be surprised at how many closers are not drama-free. Like, you tune into the ninth inning of most major league games, and some shit's going to go down.
Yeah, actually, that doesn't surprise me. I know relief pitchers are a lot like kickers, where even the most consistent ones have the off nights when they're trying to win a game last second and whatnot.
Yeah.
And relief pitching historically in baseball has always been problematic, which is why I'm trying not to turn over too many of them. And that's kind of why I stuck with Edwin Diaz as long as I have, because I'm just hoping he gets back to form, because I know it's such a flighty position. And I don't want to pick up a guy who's going to pitch an inning and get me a -4. That's a go fuck yourself.
No,
right?
You're right. And then the problem is, you get that go fuck yourself, and then, you know, the manager comes out after the game and says he's done. Like, he's out of that role. But Glover absolutely should be owned because of his stuff and because of the team that he's on. The other thing that kind of sort of scares me about him, and this is something that you'll never know, is that's a World Series type team. This is a team that at the trade deadline is going to do whatever they need to possibly fucking do to try and load up that roster for a World Series run. Now, we don't know if they're going to be, you know, angling for a closer. There have been rumors for the past couple of weeks. They've been connected with various closers. But this was before Glover, I guess, locked up the job. So a lot of it is going to depend on him. If he runs with the job, maybe that's something they check off their list. But even at that, it's tricky because, like, you know, there's teams that are in World Series contention that say, fuck it, we're just going to load up the bullpen hard. And you saw it last year with, like, the Cleveland Indians, right? They have a great closer. And, it's escaping me. Cody Allen. He's a great closer. But they still went out last year and traded the farm for Andrew Miller, who might be the best reliever in all of baseball right now. You know what I'm saying? So you never know if, even if Glover's coming along and he's pitching great, if they're going to say, you know what? We want to get an even more established ninth inning guy in there, somebody that has a proven track record in the playoffs, won't shy away from the moment, and we'll just move Glover to the setup guy, and then your eighth and ninth inning is locked down, and you get it to a seven-inning game, essentially. Because you know, if you go into the eighth with a lead, you're going to win, and that's what a lot of these playoff teams are doing now.
So this is good. You just told me about two guys that are free agents, and I was looking, and they're less than 30% owned.
There you go.
Which is great. And I think this is helpful for other people. So you just named two guys, a relief pitcher. Anybody else that you were looking at considering, or does that kind of cover it for you from the...
Those are the two that, to me, right now, this second, should be on a team.
So the leadoff hitter, what was his name again?
That's Adam Frazier of the Pirates. He's an outfielder.
Okay. So him and...
Glover. And I promise you, with Frazier, I have no idea what's going to happen. But with Glover, if you don't make the move in the next 2 days, at the most, he will be picked up. You will see it in our transactions.
Well, you have my word. We'll do it after the podcast. And it'll be good to keep track of these guys and whatnot. Before we sign off, is there anybody else you wanted to talk about, whether it's free agents or potentially cutting somebody who's been underperforming?
So we could do a couple things. One, I just want to talk about somebody that I'm absolutely in love with at the moment, and that's Jake Lamb of the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's the third baseman. He's been on fire pretty much the entire season, but lately he's been out of his fucking mind.
Okay, remind me, what round did you draft Jake Lamb?
Oh, God, eighth round.
Okay.
So last week he was the NL Player of the Week. He's got something like 6 home runs in his last 8 games.
Wow.
It's absurd. He's been on an absolute tear, and it's funny because I watched him last year. I didn't have him, and he's somebody that I watch, and I said, you know what? I'm going to have him. Like, I fell in love with him last year, kind of like an Edwin Diaz, but Diaz got too pricey for me for a closer. But Lamb is somebody that I targeted, and I probably overdrafted him for, you know, the preseason, not what he's doing now. But, you know, sometimes there's guys that you want, and you say, fuck it. If I got to get him a round or two earlier, I'll do it. And he's been on fire. He's the top-rated third baseman in all of fantasy right now.
Wow.
I doubt that sustains. He'll still finish top five or top 10 at the worst. But at the moment, he's a top third baseman in fantasy, and that's a loaded position. You know, Chris Bryant, Nolan Arenado. So he's somebody that, like, I'm watching every night, and, like, he just makes me warm and fuzzy and happy and shit.
Well, that's nice. I'm glad you're having a romantic moment there.
Yeah. And then conversely, there's another third baseman that I drafted, Michael Franco, and he's on the Philadelphia Phillies. So he was one of their top prospects, and last couple of years, he's hit about 25 home runs. He's driven in 80, which is really, really good. But he's the kind of player that they talk about, and they say there's so much potential. At some point, he's going to break out, and he's going to hit 30-plus bombs and drive in 100 runs. You know what I mean? And I watched it, and I believed it. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to own him this year, and this year is going to be the breakout. And
what round did you draft him?
I drafted him and Lamb together, believe it or not.
So 8-9.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Or 7-8, I think it was. 7-8.
Okay.
But it just hasn't fucking worked out. He hasn't been hitting at all. He's got, I think, 4 or 5 home runs on the year. And his manager's so pissed with him, he doesn't know what to do anymore. He began the year at the cleanup spot, right? Prime, home runs, RBIs, right. Whatever else.
Batting fourth, yep.
Manager's fucking around with him, though. He's not performing. He hit him 6th. Nothing. He moved him down to 7th. First time ever in his career, he hit 7th. Nothing's working. Manager got so pissed off with him that he benched him for 2 straight games. And that's your opening day cleanup hitter. So I'm pretty much tapped out with him. I think if I need to, I'm going to cut bait with him.
I was just going to ask you, is he cuttable? Is he tradable for upside? Or?
You're not going to get anyone to give you anything of value at this point with the way he's performing, because he's not even, like, his floor should have been 20 to 25 home runs. And he's not even trending that way. So he's somebody that just kind of pisses me off at the moment.
Damn.
And yeah, when he's off the team at some point, I think I'm going to feel pretty good about it.
Well, okay. You know, I think we ran a pretty good gauntlet talking about the trades, some hot free agents and a bust or two. And I think next week we'll continue doing just same thing. We'll talk about some free agents to pick up. We'll talk about a couple additional busts that we're noticing, and there's a few more hot guys that I'd like to bring up, because I think you're at the time of year in baseball where you like your roster and you're either churning the bottom, you're trying to figure out trades, and you're riding out, right? Because we're in the middle of the season now, right? We're 8 weeks in.
Yeah, like this is a really nice time, and I feel really, really happy about getting to this part of the season, because you're starting to get a feel for, okay, you know who these guys are and how their seasons are trending. Like, it's no longer, oh, it's just a slow start. Or it's no longer, oh, man, he's, you know, coming out of the gate strong. It's, you know what? Maybe he is going to have a career best season. Or maybe he is, like in Franco's case, just going to have a shit season. So you're to a point where, like, if you're adding or cutting guys, you feel a little bit better about it. Like, if I cut Franco, I'm not going to feel like, oh, man, that's really going to bite me in the ass. I'm going to feel like, you know what? He should be on waivers for now, and I'm good with it. I gave him ample opportunity, and that's that. I like this time of the year because you're starting to really figure out what's what and who's who, and you can manage the roster, I guess you could say, more confidently.
Yeah, and, you know, doing season-long baseball as a virgin, it's my first time, and it feels a lot like being in school where you're going through a semester, you're studying, you're figuring out your teacher, you're figuring out your workload, what you can and can't do. So like in a spring semester, which is an accelerated semester, you would never take 3 classes at once because that's suicide. But for me, that's what baseball kind of feels like. And so I'm trying to upkeep more and more. And the more these conversations we're having, I'm actually taking to heart. And as I'm telling you what I'm doing with my lineup, and hopefully people who are listening to us are also doing as such, because I think your veteranness really helps put in that added flavor until we arch our way into football season where we're both veterans.
Yeah, absolutely. And like for me, the best thing and the most gratifying thing is that, you know, you can tell me, okay, you're heeding the advice and it's actually paying off. Like I like that a few weeks ago we talked about Tanaka and I told you, you know, he's winning now because the run support, but he's actually pitching like shit. And then, you know, he took a shit. Or, you know, like, I'm in love with that Edwin Diaz kind of sort of hold on. And, you know, it worked out the way that it did. It's nice when the shit works out well, because obviously in this game, it doesn't always happen that way.
Agreed. Well, I think we put on one of the worst fantasy podcasts. Thank you so much for joining us, and until next time.
All right.
Thanks for listening to Fantasy Advice Bros, presented by Gabber Media.